Hello, everyone, and welcome to CoDesign, a podcast created by students and faculty as part of the Center for Teaching and Learning at Southern New Hampshire University.
Each week, teams of faculty members and students will explore issues around teaching, learning, and the student experience on the Manchester, New Hampshire campus. If you have questions, please contact the Center for Teaching and Learning at ctl@snu.edu. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hey everyone, my name is Vincent Corbo, and I'm an assistant professor of psychology at Southern New Hampshire University.
Hi everyone, my name is Sabrina Johns, and I'm a senior in the psychology program here at SNU. I'm also a presidential ambassador, which is how I got involved in this project.
All right, so the topic of our podcast today is about failure. In the words of the playwright Samuel Beckett, try again, fail again, fail better. This is important because failure seems to be at the heart of the learning process. Failure seems to be at the heart of the college experience. So today we wanted to discuss, how are we handling failure in college? Are we creating a culture where failure is accepted and where it's viewed as a teaching tool? Or are we creating a monster in failure and generating potentially undue anxiety about the process of failing? So, Sabrina, if you had to define failure, how would you define it?
Well, obviously failure is looked at as doing something poorly, not succeeding at something. But I think what we're looking at today is, should it really be viewed as that? Should failing be looked at as not doing well or not succeeding? And looking at, what is it about failure that is so bad? If it is not succeeding, what is so bad about not succeeding at every single thing that you do?
I would add that we have to put failure back in its context. Where are you in the learning process? We see failure sometimes at the microscopic level. Did you succeed or not on a quiz? Did you succeed or not on a small assignment? And I think we put a premium on succeeding perfectly at everything, not looking at growth enough and not putting enough importance on the journey leading to the destination. Everything has to be perfect. And if they're not, then nothing is worth being done.
Right. I think it's hard, especially in college settings, because like failure is either you get an A or you get a D or an F on something. And nobody really thinks of getting an F on something as a growth opportunity. I don't think, at least I haven't been conditioned to see getting an F on something as a growth opportunity. It's more of, you didn't succeed, you didn't work hard enough to get a better grade. Whereas in maybe other scenarios, failure is framed differently. Maybe in sporting events, if you don't succeed at something, there has been more of a conversation about, you didn't fail because you didn't win. You just need to work harder next time. So I think it's interesting looking at failure from different settings, different scenarios.
So let's talk about the way that assignments are graded, or the concepts of grades in general. I think there's something to be said about grading assignments with a specific scale. What I'm thinking is, sometimes you hand back work that's a, let's say, a B minus. It's good. It's just not great yet. And the perception that I have in terms of the reaction that it generates is that it's a failure. I got a B minus. It's horrible, horrendous. So I wonder if we look at failure as anything that is short of perfection. And if it is not perfect, then it doesn't deserve being tried to or attempted. Do we really offer the possibility to try something knowing that you're not going to get it completely right, knowing that you're not going to be able to complete 100% of what you think the task is.
Right. Yeah, I don't think I've had a lot of experience with classwork like that, where it's meant to challenge you and not meant to get yourself an A. Most of the time, work is either review of something, so you either get it or you don't. And that kind of makes you feel like, we already learned this, so you should get it. And if you don't, you didn't succeed at learning it. And, you know, other work is just kind of expected that you did the research on your own to be able to succeed at it and get it perfect the first time. But going back to something that you said, I like that you said yet. You haven't perfected it yet, because I think that's another point that people haven't stressed, is that it hasn't been enforced that it's not great yet. It's been, it's not great. So to not have enforced that little word yet makes it feel like you didn't get it right this time, then you're not gonna, there's nowhere to go from there. You just failed it.
You got it. It's the process that's really important. It's the learning process. It's that journey, trying to develop something. I still write papers and I still get comments on them as if I was still completely novice at writing articles. And that's fine. I think we see a lot of learning now in terms of, do I do it or do I not do it? Nothing in between. And we don't necessarily appreciate as much that some skills can take a lifetime to develop. And so I think we've kind of set a culture in the education system, or the way that we present higher ed, in terms of, can you do X or can you not do X? And if we view it like that, then failure means that you cannot. It's a binary system. You cannot. And so there's no worth to your work. You're viewing assessments as, I need to complete X and it has to be perfect. But let me ask you a question. Do you think that throughout your undergrad journey, you were taught how to fail well? And if not, would you have wanted to be taught how to fail?
I think that's difficult because, I mean, I never failed anything in undergrad, but I do wish that I'd had the opportunity, because of how difficult it is now for me to like learn how to fail in this grad class. That's really challenging. And it's hard to recognize that, you know, it's not that I am incapable. I just need to keep learning and keep trying at the things that I'm failing at. I guess I wish in a perfect world that there were safe opportunities to fail things.
How do you implement something that will be taken seriously enough by students to go through the unpleasant experience of failing and then realizing that it's not the end of the world? I don't know how to do that yet.
I agree. I think it's a fine line and a difficult balance between, like, how do you allow people to fail and have that growth opportunity, but also not be the teacher that everyone dreads going to because they're not going to be physically able to get an A in a class, and it's going to tank their GPA because they know that this, it's like a great opportunity, but like the 4.0 students don't see it that way because they see it as something in the way of perfection. So it's like, how do you create that without becoming that scenario? Or is that scenario like okay and something that, you know, students just have to move past? Is that part of the learning process?
Is failing at something inevitable? And if it is, then should we prepare people for it in a context where the stakes are not that high?
That's the other difficult part to look at, is like, so many people do think that the stakes are very high for college GPA. You know, when the GPA isn't reflective of you as a student, but I think people see college is such a high stakes thing to get perfect grades throughout.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I think if you were to ask admissions for various graduate programs, or if you asked a lot of employers, what is going to be the importance, the true importance of GPA? Not saying that it doesn't have any importance, because it does reflect something, but it doesn't reflect everything.
Do you have a specific personal story of failure that led to personal growth?
Grad school. One of the most important things in grad school when you're doing research is your capacity to obtain a scholarship. And you spend weeks working on your grant application. You do a lot of reading. You do a little bit of research to give yourself some pilot data. You do some analyses, and then you spend weeks writing the most beautiful, perfect, flawless promise of work that you'll be conducting. You have your transcripts in there. Essentially, you're putting your whole performance as an undergrad and grad student forward, hoping that the committee sees you as one of the promising ones in research. And so I applied for a fellowship 3 years in a row. The first year, I really didn't rank well. Hadn't had enough publications, didn't have enough research experience. I thought, all right, I'm still green at this. I can do it. So I applied again. And again, you get this beautifully written rejection letter, which is an awesomely polite, sorry, buddy, you're not cutting it. The third year I applied, I thought, I have everything. My grades were good. I had some better experience. I had a cool project. I thought I had it. And this is a fellowship that you apply and you're in competition with everyone in your field in back in Canada and the whole province of Quebec. So that's a lot of people in the pool. And I get my letter back and I frantically open and I read that I ranked number 15 that year out of all the candidates, number 15. And right below, they mention, and we gave out 14 fellowships.
Oh.
So I was number one of the people who did not get a fellowship that year. And some other lab mates in my lab actually got it. And so I was the guy that didn't get it. And you're working on it for weeks. It's not like it's one assignment in a class. It is the assignments that you're writing up. It's the one thing that you're trying to do, and it didn't work again. So I can tell you the following year, I actually thought, am I really going to apply for that again? I've been rejected three times. Three times I failed at accomplishing this task. What I didn't realize is that I'd gotten better and better at writing those grants. And it's not like you wake up one morning and you know how to write an application for a fellowship. And it's not something that the first time you do it, you're, you know, perfect at it. It takes a while. Some people get it faster. Some people had better grades. Some people had a project that may have been deemed more interesting by whoever did the ranking. The point is there's a lot of factors that go into who gets it or not, and no one is an expert to begin with at that. So yeah, it took me four tries versus somebody else who may have had it, you know, on their second try. Did that make me ultimately a worse grad student? I don't think it did.
No.
Did it significantly slow me down in completing my grad program? It didn't. It made me want to quit for a bit because you think, you know, I'm never going to get it. But you just take a breath. You wait a few days, a few weeks, and eventually you realize I'm still working. I'm still doing science. I can do things better. And it's telling me there's something for me to go after. I can do something better. I'm not at the top yet, which I found was really motivating. It stinks to fail at a task, but it's still one task. and things go on and you just have to continue. Any story from your end that you're thinking, all right, this is a good story of failure?
I think I'm living a story of failure right now.
Okay.
As dreary as that sounds. So I, as I mentioned, I just started grad school in February. And in this grad class, I find myself incredibly challenged, like just very much more challenging than any other class I have been in so far, as it should be, as it's a master's level class. But I submitted an annotated bibliography, and I get the grade back, and it's an F. And I was so distraught over this F because I had never gotten an F before, especially not on something that was so time-consuming. So I equated my mindset around it was, I worked so long on this. I worked so hard on this. How could I get an F? And that was really hard for me, but I took the feedback and I worked harder on the next assignment. And I was honestly more confident knowing that I had all this feedback. And as much as you think this story is going to be such a great ending right now, I got another F on that paper. And ouch. That one really, really destroyed me. I was in mourning for a few hours after that one because I was like, I worked way longer. It was like a 4-page minimum. I did 12 pages. I worked so hard and I just got another F and I was so distraught. And that pretty much brings us up to speed of where I'm at. But, you know, I think it just taught me that like not every F is going to lead immediately into an A. You're not going to immediately learn everything that you did wrong and fix it in the next week's assignment.
It's interesting. There's two thoughts. One, I like the turn of phrase that you use. I didn't have the opportunity to fail in undergrad, as if failing is now a luxury. We should all have the opportunity to fail. And I like the fact that you're right. Sometimes it takes more than one shot. Sometimes it's not going to be a movie story where there's one failure and then there's a montage with some silly music and the next time character does it perfectly.
Right. That being said, I do have a friend who has a really great story of how things just didn't work out in the real world and her experience with that. So I've invited my dear friend Brooke Shaw to come on the podcast today. She is an alumni of SNHU. She now works at Duke University.
Welcome, Brooke. When did you graduate from SNHU?
I graduated the class of 2019.
Okay. And you were a psych major?
Yes, I was.
Cool.
And what are you doing now?
I work for the Department of Psychology and Neuroscience at Duke as a staff assistant, but I mostly focus on undergraduate grants for research travel.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So we've been talking about different stories of failure and of things not working out.
Yes.
And Sabrina mentioned that you may have a good story.
I do. So I just mentioned my current position. And it's funny because I at one point did not have this position. So to get into that, after graduating from SNHU, my boyfriend and I moved a week after down to North Carolina. I did not have a job lined up, which is very scary when you make a big move. We are originally from Maine. So 14-hour move down to North Carolina. He had employment and I figured, you know, I should have good luck finding something because what I've seen from SNHU and from other recent graduates in our class, you know, people are finding jobs and they're finding them easily. So, you know, shouldn't be a problem. I found this position that I'm currently in on LinkedIn and I applied. first, I didn't hear anything back. So I reached out, said I was still interested. It had been a week since being in North Carolina. They got back to me and we scheduled an interview. So I went in for the interview and I hit it off with the two people that I interviewed with. I thought it went really well. And at the end of the interview, the people I interviewed with, they told me, they're like, yeah, like you're fit for this job. Like we should be getting back to you. Like you're our top applicant. And so I got home thinking, oh my God, I got this job. Like I'm from a small town in Maine, went to college in New Hampshire, and I have a shot at a job at Duke. And, you know, a week goes by, hadn't heard anything. I follow up. They say, oh, well, they're still processing some HR stuff. They'll get back to me. I was like, oh, okay, great. Like, thank you so much. Another week goes by. I'm like, okay, like I haven't heard anything yet. Something up, you know? So I reach out again. Finally, a month later, they reached out to me and said I didn't get the job and they gave it to someone else. And I was devastated. That rocked my world because through my experience at SNU, I never really had a moment of failure where I was like, oh, like I really thought I had that. I really lost this opportunity. I really failed at achieving this. So this is my first big opportunity that I was declined when I was basically told that I had it. And I didn't really know how to react. It was really hard because all you see are the Facebook posts from peers saying, oh, starting this new job in a week at this place. And it's like, oh, like, how are they doing that? And so I had a good month. And I mean, Sabrina knows, she was such a huge support system for me for that time. But I went through a month of questioning everything I had done up to this point. Did I pick the right major? Did I have the right jobs? Did I take the right classes? Was it enough? I felt like it wasn't. So I went through a lot of that. I was able to get a job at a local boutique. And then a week after starting there, I got a call from Duke. And I was like, well, this is a little weird. And it was the woman I interviewed with, who's my now supervisor that I love. And she said the person that they gave the job to ended up declining after they negotiated salaries. Do you still want the job? And you might think like, oh, she probably said, yep, right away, I'll take it. But I was so scared to put myself out there again. I was so scared to say yes, because I didn't want to be denied that again. And so after I lost it the first time, I was scared to do a reach job. I had such imposter syndrome, like, oh, I'm not good enough for these positions, despite having a bachelor's degree and all this experience. But I ended up saying yes, and I took the position. I've now been there for almost 2 years, which is really exciting. I absolutely love my job. And now I'm actually going back to school for my master's in marketing. Yeah.
This is a good story. There's a couple of things that you said that caught my attention. Mm-hmm. The fact that it was the first kind of big thing that didn't go right. And it's true. We do feel helpless when that happens, because wait, that's not supposed to happen.
Exactly.
Failure brings you to question some of the assumptions that you may have had. When you started your undergrad in psychology, did you ever think that you would go into marketing?
No, not at all. I thought I was going to get right out of my bachelor's, go into a master's for psychology, and then to my PhD in clinical psych. I mean, you can ask anyone that knew me really from my undergrad. It's like, yeah, that's what Brooke is going to do. And if I were to now tell them I'm getting my master's in marketing, they'd probably be like, what is she doing?
Do you see that as a failure, or do you see that as you actually made a new decision that's based on more experience that's bringing you closer to doing something that you find meaningful?
Yeah, I think it is what you said about really thinking things through, and now it's turned into an accomplishment, because now I'm doing things that I'm really passionate about that I never would have thought to try or like put myself out there for if I didn't have this failure. But I definitely was not prepared to have that thought process. It was a long thought process and a long chunk of time. So we're also taught that, you know, you should be passionate about the work you do. It should be your passion. Like, you should show up to work every day and be like, yeah, I'm passionate about this. You don't have to show up to work passionate about what you're doing on a job that you're getting right out of college. If you do, that's great and awesome. But I think that expectation sets you up to fail, because as a 21, 22 year old, really you need income.
I think that's like a very important part of failure, is I think people see failure as something that's going to hinder them from being able to get the exact job that they want or get into the exact grad school that they want right out of college. And which leads to in itself feeling like that is a failure, like overall feeling that if you don't get into the right program after, or you don't get into the job that you want right after college, that you've failed.
Two things that I would want to ask both of you. One is, what would you tell freshman you about success and about failure? And what does failure actually mean? And the other thing is, who's judging your success and who's judging your failure?
I kind of mentioned now I'm doing my master's in marketing and I actually am back at SNU for that, which is, I enjoy and I think is great. But I was so, I mean, I haven't even shared it publicly on social media that I've done it, because a lot of people expect me to go right in a psychology or go to school at Duke. And why isn't she getting her degree at Duke when she works there? Why is she going back to SNU and for marketing? These are things that were in my head. But at the end of the day, that's me making that up in my head. And people likely aren't thinking those things. And even if they are, why does that matter? They don't get to decide, you know, oh, she, that's a failure. That's a success. She's doing great. Oh, she's not doing so great. And I think when you have a failure, yes, it can be gut-wrenching. Yes, it really stinks, but nobody's going to come pick you up out of that. There's no one that's going to come like save the day and save you out of this failure. Like, that's up to you to, how can I not necessarily make it into a success, but how can I kind of reverse this feeling? How can I be productive here?
I agree. And I feel like I would also tell myself to not worry so much about what other people think or what other people will think of my failure, and more so use it as an opportunity to grow. And it's not a failure to change directions or to not get an opportunity right off the bat.
I guess what matters is learn how to take the blow, take a minute, breathe, think, and move forward.
Yes. Yep.
That's all for our episode today. Thank you everyone for listening, and we hope you learned some valuable life lessons about the importance of failure.
The Co-Design Podcast would like to give credit to Ketsa for the song Funky Fortune and to Dr. Turtle for the song Over the Water, Humans Gather.